Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, June 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us this afternoon is Dr. Oscar Williams of UAlbany's Africana Studies Department. He is here to discuss the history of civil rights and answer your questions about how that history relates to what is going on in this country today. Race is one of those discussions people are often nervous to have. But today it's about open conversation. Dr. Williams and I encourage you to call. If you have a question about history of civil rights or Black Lives Matter, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Civil rights, Dr. Oscar Williams, your call's coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. George Floyd is being laid to rest today in Houston. And it's a sad day for America. This is a funeral that did not have to happen. Not today. George Floyd should still be alive. I am not a jury. I'm not a judge. But the video, to me, of that death 2 weeks ago looked an awful lot like murder. And in a broader sense, it makes you wonder about the human condition. What amount of hate does it take to do something like that to another human being? In a more narrow sense, what does it tell us about the state of race relations in America in 2020? Here to help us put it in perspective, where we are now, where we've been since the 1600s, maybe where we're going, is Dr. Oscar Williams of UAlbany's Africana Studies Department. He has a PhD from The Ohio State University and specializes in African-American history, African-American literature, American slavery, and Black nationalism. Dr. Williams has focused his research on 20th century African-American history, 19th century African-American history, with an emphasis on antebellum slavery, and African-American intellectual history. If you have a question about civil rights, and yeah, as we said at the outset, you know, it's something people often don't want to talk about. I encourage you, and I think Dr. Williams will encourage you, to give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpopwamc.org if you so desire, but that number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Oscar Williams, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on today.
You know, The funeral is going on right now for George Floyd. And as horrific as that killing was, this was far from the first time. Let's just start with the toughest question you're going to answer all day. What will it take for it to be the last time?
That's a very good question, and you're right. It's a very tough question. And first of all, let me express my condolences for George Floyd and his family, as well as those who have died because of police violence and brutality. It's a longstanding problem that, unfortunately, our society has had to deal with. One fortunate thing I am seeing right now is that you see a number of communities standing up against what's been going on right now. And also the talk of reform, that's very heartening to hear. It is a long time coming, but I do believe we still have a long way to go. This has been a problem that's been, unfortunately, in our society really since the inception of our country. And, you know, we still have a number of hurdles to cross when it comes to race in this country.
You know, in doing some research on you today, I found a clip where you were talking about the Seminole Wars. And gosh, that goes back many, many years. But your contention was people of African descent in the U.S. were not passive to their situations and often did rebel. And I thought maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I mean, when you take a look at American slavery, certainly people of African descent who were enslaved were not passive to this situation. Of course, you have some of the better known rebellions, such as the Nat Turner Rebellion in my home state of Virginia in 1831. Which has been brought up recently, but a lot of people may not know about it, the Louisiana Slave Revolt, or what was known as the German Coast Revolt in 1811, in which you had upwards of 300 to 500 enslaved African Americans marching on the city of New Orleans after taking over some plantations, which was suppressed by, I believe, U.S. troops and militia. And then as a show of force, the leaders were executed, their heads were beheaded, and then placed on stakes leading into the city as a warning. That is, if anyone tries to pull something like this, this will happen to you. And then, of course, you mentioned about the Seminole Wars, which also maybe a lot of people may not be familiar with, but in actuality, it was a revolt not only involving Native Americans, but also enslaved African Americans, since many of them went to the Seminoles when they escaped. And that series of wars lasted from, I believe, 1816 or 18 all the way up to the early 1840s. So, yes, there's been a long history of rebellion against enslavement by people of African descent.
Dr. Oscar Williams of UAlbany's Africana Studies Department joins us today. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You wrote a book, and it's such an interesting topic. A person that is almost forgotten today, 40 years plus after his death. The book is Portrait of a Black Conservative, George S. Schuyler. Mm-hmm. And before we take our break and then get to the calls, I've got to ask you, and this is a hypothetical question, but in 1963, he wrote a famous speech that he delivered at Rockland Community College, The Case Against the Civil Rights Bill. And he was a conservative, and he was against this. Mm-hmm. And as I understand him, and you understand him much better than I do, he thought, yeah, white discrimination against blacks was, quote, morally wrong, nonsensical, unfair, unchristian, cruelly unjust. But his opinion was, it's not the position of the federal government, and not in any way will be successful to change people's minds for something that is so ingrained. Today, if he was alive today, seeing where we are today, would in fact he change his opinion?
Well, knowing George Schuyler and the type of person he was, probably not, because George Schuyler was definitely a person who stuck to what he believed. I mean, he definitely believed that protesting against the civil rights movement was fruitless. And as you probably know, he also wrote a commentary right after Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination, in which he actually not celebrated his death, but basically said, well, all these marches that you did, all of this trouble that you caused, this is the end result. Predictably, a number of people spoke out against him, but at the same time, he had his supporters, predictably in the conservative community, when she said, yeah, you're right, basically what he said. So as tragic as these current events have been, particularly with the police killings, well publicized, he probably still would have stuck to his guns and said, well, it's simply a question of law and order. It's not discrimination. So, he was a rather interesting person to write about. I'll just say that.
You know, I must say I have not read the book, but when I saw that you wrote this book, it made me want to pick up a copy. So I will certainly do that. We have to take a break here. Dr. Oscar Williams is our guest, and Dr. Williams is with UAlbany's Africana Studies Department. We talk about race relations today, and we encourage you to call 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're joined today by Dr. Oscar Williams of UAlbany's Africana Studies Department. And one email here, Oscar, and then we'll get to the phones. This one came in from Dan. Subject heading Second Amendment. Is it true that the Second Amendment was put into place with the thought of suppressing rebellions by enslaved people? I know that many people in the 18th century were not in favor of standing armies, but that only seems part of the reason. And that's from Dan.
Okay. Very good question. With the Second Amendment, we're usually taught that it was in response to the British with the American Revolution. At the same time, if you take a look at the South, which, of course, was deep in the throes of American slavery, possibly did look at that as something that would protect them and actually enhance American slavery. Because when you take a look at the South, there were two things that white Southerners feared: a slave revolt, as well as a Native American attack. Now, also, just to be clear, slavery did exist in the North as well, and I'm sure some of your listeners know that. But particularly in the South, it's not really a surprise that you saw a number of military installations pop up during the antebellum era, as well as military schools, because that, I believe, was in response to slavery. So it's a possibility. I would definitely say that.
We're joined today by Dr. Oscar Williams. You ready to hit the phones?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
All right, here we go. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We start out with Nina in East Hoosick. Hello, Nina.
Hi, Ray. Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Who is the guest on this show. I have been going to protests for a very, very long time. And it started very young. When I was attending Bennington College, I was one of the representatives for the college and the community when we all went by the hundreds of thousands to Washington after the Kent State killings. And I have been on many protests over many, many years. And I've also lived with the Lakota Sioux as doing a very wonderful project as a musical director, listening to their music, being taken to their powwows and their sacred dances, and seeing the conditions under which they live, which is absolute squalor. And I want to say something that I don't hear talked about, which is that this country, while it is founded on the ideals of democracy, it was democracy for the white privileged male. Let us go back to the origins of genocide that wiped out the Native Americans, slaughtered, I'm speaking of the Lakota here, the millions of buffalo that were sacred to them, by which they lived, put the Indians, as they call themselves, Native Americans, we whites or Washichu, as they call us, that's what we say that of them, in ghettos, in poverty, on reservations. If they leave the reservation, they lose their culture. If they stay there, they are on state-assisted welfare. I think we have to start looking. We talk about undoing the system. We've been talking about this for eons. Look at the origins of white privilege. And the white privilege shortage of men against which we have struggled as women, as people of color. I happen to be white, but the identification of the minority and the oppressed goes back to the very origins of this country. And I don't hear it being talked about. And I'm very grateful that I have the chance to bring it up on this program. And I'm happy to hear your response. And thank you.
All right, Dr. Williams.
Well, just responding to your listener, I would have to agree. When you take a look at the formation of this country, white privilege was a key element. In fact, even looking at the white population in the United States, not everyone had the right to vote. It was merely white male property owners who of a certain amount who had the right to vote. And then over time, it was extended to all white males. I think that was in the early 19th century. And then, of course, even among African Americans, it was extended to African American males. And then, of course, with the 19th Amendment in 1920, extended to women. So, yes, this is a problem that has been with this country for a long time. And I would have to arguably say that it does go back to white privilege.
Well, Nina, thank you very much for that call. We're joined today by Dr. Oscar Williams of UAlbany's Africana Studies Department. And our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mark in Salem, New York. Mark, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Let me put things in perspective from my point of view. I'm 68 years old, and I went to Shenandoah High School. In sixth grade, that was when President Kennedy was assassinated, and my teacher was a black man. He was the only black person in the entire Shenandoah system. And in fifth grade, going into sixth, we were marched over to his class, and he gave us a book book assignment, which is to read Black Like Me, tell our parents. And they were all engineers, so we lived in a de facto segregated neighborhood, and we had no bias whatsoever. I mean, Mr. Harvey was. Walter Harvey, he should have an autobiography done or a biography done about him. He was a wonderful man, and he was a wonderful teacher. And then they hired a kindergarten teacher that year too. But we were 9,000 kids at that point. So I never had one thought about it one way or the other, and I don't understand how this country has disintegrated from that point of view to what we're dealing with after Martin Luther King's assassination and the whole thing. I mean, as a child, I guess you have to learn bigotry. I guess that's what I'm saying.
All right, Dr. Williams, you would like to comment on that?
Yes. I mean, if I'm understanding the caller correctly, I guess he's trying to figure out how is it that we have gotten to this point in time. Response to that, And my response to that is really when you take a look at history, you have always seen waves of racism appear. Just taking a look at the, last 100 years in the 1920s. Of course, you had the rise of the Ku Klux Klan. That's also when you had the Tulsa Massacre in 1921. Then, of course, we had the Great Depression, World War II, And then from that comes the Civil Rights Movement. And with the Civil Rights Movement, it seems like we're taking a step forward. We see marches, demonstrations, and so forth. Then, of course, you have really the conservative revolution, in which you start to see a receding of those gains that occurred in the Civil Rights Movement. And not surprisingly, you also start to see a rise in racism once again. Then, of course, with the 90s, we had the Clinton administration, which some people would say wasn't any different than what you saw with Reagan. But nonetheless, though, it seems like a period where you do see a little bit of progress. And then, of course, we have the election of President Obama, and all of a sudden people think, okay, racism is over. But the ironic thing is you start to see once again the rise in racism again. And then, of course, we have the election of our current president, and I won't talk too much about him, but not surprisingly, you see really almost an embracing of white, definitely an embracing of white supremacy, just from the things that have been said. And it's not surprising that now you start to see these events happen all over again. So it's really a continuum of events that, unfortunately, we have always dealt with in this country. And it's just now we're at the point where, once again, we're back to really all of this chaos being brought to the forefront once again. And once again, we have to, as a society, fight back against it and just say, no, this is wrong. I don't know if I've answered your caller's questions, but that's just really my interpretation.
We're joined today. Go ahead.
What's going on now?
Dr. Oscar Williams is our guest. And, you know, you're a study of history, and really this goes back to the 1600s. I'm sure you've thought about it, but ever have you had an epiphany and say, okay, in order to fix this, human souls have to do what? What do we have to do to make this go away? Clearly, legislation may not be the answer.
Well, I mean, in my opinion, I think really the best that people can do at this moment is just really try to be open to learning about other people, their culture, their society, their viewpoints. And also at the same time, people have to be honest about where they are mentally. In other words, you may have some people that harbor racist thoughts, or what we would consider to be racist thoughts. And they have to be honest enough and say, okay, this is what I believe. Now, I know, of course, that invites a backlash against them, but my true feeling is that people have to be honest about where they are and what they believe. And we just need to have an open discussion about really what we've grown up to believe is right or wrong. And then from there, just find some type of middle ground. I mean, at least that's my hope of what will come out of this.
Dr. Oscar Williams, our guest today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Sean is in Albany. Sean, you're up.
Hi, thank you for having me, and thank you, Dr. Williams, for your commentary. I'm a PhD student at SUNY Albany in the philosophy faculty, and I just have two questions. One is, could you possibly touch on...
We lost you there, Sean. Go
lost cause, lost cause narrative. And then the second part is, what would you recommend to a student who wanted to study the philosophy of race in gender studies. And I'll take my question off the air.
Sean, thank you very much. Go ahead, doctor.
Okay. Yeah, I believe the first question was about the lost cause
narrative. Yeah.
And I'm very well familiar with that. For your listeners who may not be, the lost cause narrative is basically the discussion that came out of the South after the Civil War. Essentially, former Confederate generals, I believe, like Jubal Early, wrote their interpretation of the Civil War. And what they argued was that the South fought a just cause and preserving their way of life, and that the North, of course, was an invading force that wanted to impose their will upon the South. So as a result, you had Reconstruction, which was an abject failure because they placed African Americans in power who, according to the Lost Cause, not only were incompetent, but they were corrupt by nature. So as a result, the South had no choice but to resort to violence, to expel what they saw was an invading force. So that's particularly where you have groups like the Ku Klux Klan being glorified in this Lost Cause narrative. In fact, probably the best known example of that would be D.W. Griffith's The Birth of a Nation, which came out in 1915, mm-hmm. which ironically, it's considered one of the greatest films ever made in American history, but at the same time, it's a glorification of the Ku Klux Klan. But with the Lost Cause narrative, it really gave birth to this idea of glorifying Confederate generals like Robert E. Lee, P.T. Beauregard, and several others. And in my hometown of Richmond, Virginia, of course, for anyone who's been there, you know there is a avenue, Monument Avenue, which prominently features these very ornate statues of Robert E. Lee, P.T. Beauregard, and several other Confederate generals. So basically, it's just a celebration of the idea that the South was just in fighting the Civil War, but as a result of not being as powerful as the North, they lost the war. But what I always argued was, when it comes to this Lost Cause narrative, they may have lost the actual war, but they won the hearts and minds of America when they started writing their own narrative. You know, movies like Gone with the Wind, which also is considered one of the best films ever made, but nonetheless part of this Lost Cause narrative. So, and I believe the second question was... I'm sorry, I've been talking so much, I forgot the second part of the question.
Yeah, you're good, all right. I'll tell you what, you know, he hung up, so we'll have to take it from there, and we'll take a quick break here. Dr. Oscar Williams from UAlbany's Africana Studies Department is here, and we'll hit the home stretch and get more of your calls in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by Dr. Oscar Williams of UAlbany's Africana Studies Department. One email here at Dr. Williams, and then we'll go to the phones until the end of the program. This one's from Mark, and the subject heading is Vox Pop, Police, and Civil Rights. When you live in a well-to-do community, writes Mark, the police make you feel like they're there to protect you. But when you live in a poor community, the police instead make you feel like they are there to protect everyone else from you. This is true even in our region. Wouldn't you agree that it's not about defunding the police, that it should be instead about changing the relationship that the police have with the communities they serve? And that is from Mark.
Once again, good question. I mean, really, when I take a look at this topic, I do believe it is a matter of police being more familiar with the communities that they patrol. I definitely believe reform is overdue for a number of police departments. But at the same time, it's really about, I think, the very same police who go into these communities being familiar and having some type of connection with the very people that they serve. Because oftentimes, I believe with a number of police departments, many policemen who work these communities don't live in them, and they don't know the people. So as a result, they see themselves as strangers, and that really they need to be on their guard. Now, is that a justification for police brutality? Of course, it is not. But I personally think that if the police are more familiar with the very communities that they serve, then there you have a better relationship coming out of that. And hopefully that'll be one of the things that comes out of this new police reform movement that people at least right now are talking about. But we'll just see if it becomes a reality.
You know, again, you have studied the history of this for a long time. Does it at any point to you seem like a broken record? I mean, these conversations have been out there for a long time. Sometimes they percolate. Sometimes they're under the surface. Does the repetition get to you?
I mean, it's funny you mention that because I was just talking to someone the other day and they asked themselves, does the needle ever move in this country when it comes to race? Because they were saying the same things that came up during the civil rights movement seem to be coming up again now. I will admit from a personal standpoint, it does get discouraging, but I also believe as a society, we can't give up addressing these issues. We can't give up discussing about race. We can't be afraid of it either. Even if we hear things that we don't want to hear, we can't give up discussing about the problems in our society. Because if we give up, then not only are you going to see these things happen again, but it may possibly mean the end of this country as we know it. So yeah, it gets discouraging at times, but we can't give up trying to tackle this issue.
All right, let's get to the phones here and bring the program in. We have so many callers. I hope we get to as many as we can. Let's go to Joanne in Ticonderoga. Joanne, you're on.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, please explain the phenomena of Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court. Why is he always vote against the best interests of his fellow African-Americans? How did he come to be what he is? It seems like this issue is never brought up in any discussion. Thank you.
Okay. Joanne, you want to hang on there or do you want to go?
I'll go.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, Doctor.
Oh, yeah, Clarence Thomas, or Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, I should say. He's a bit of an anomaly, if you will. I mean, the ironic thing about Clarence Thomas is that he benefited from affirmative action, and then when he finally started working for the federal government, he was very key in the 1980s in the EEOC in passing laws restricting affirmative action. Then, of course, as we all know, he was appointed a Supreme Court justice in 1991 by George Bush. With Clarence Thomas, believe it or not, he reminds me a lot of George Schuyler. I mean, George Schuyler was a guy who also held very strict conservative views. And really, the thing about Clarence Thomas is that what he shows is that African-American intellectual thought is not a monolith. Even though they may have suffered experiences of racism, as Clarence Thomas did when he was, I believe, in Catholic school as a young boy, he processed it different. I mean, this is a man who actually said that he read and believed in what Malcolm X had to say in the 60s. And then before we know it, in the 1990s, he is the poster boy for black conservatism. So I can understand your caller's take on being confused about Clarence Thomas. But really, if you take a look at Clarence Thomas, he's really a part of this interesting intellectual dichotomy that's always been in the African-American community. That is, not all African-Americans, you know, have the same thought, have the same processing of things. And with Clarence Thomas, he just chose to go the conservative route.
Dr. Oscar Williams is our guest. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551. Brenda in upstate New York. Brenda.
Yes. I have a couple of questions. One of the questions is deals with our founding fathers, okay? I just believe that racism and discrimination just didn't start. It was way back when our founding fathers formulated the country. Thomas Jefferson, for instance, had a slave, okay? Many of our founding fathers had slaves. The white privilege in this country was formulated way back in the beginning of our country. The rights to vote, the rights to own property, and they wiped out the American Native Americans, okay? And I just feel that this problem just didn't start, and it's not going to stop anytime soon until the country rewrites or makes a new constitution. Because the constitution that we have now, it works, but it's not working for everyone.
All right, Brenda, before we let Dr. Williams go, what changes would you make to the Constitution?
Well, one of the changes I would make to the Constitution is, first of all, the judicial system really has to change because it's unequal, okay? And the jail, the prison system is absolutely ludicrous, okay? The police situation is crazy. It should have been changed a long time ago. These are institutions that for many of years have been discriminating and racist, and we've talked and talked about it, and we've come to a point now where we have to riot, okay, in order to have changes. This change should have been a long time coming.
All right, let's see what Dr. Williams has to say. Dr. Williams.
Yes, just addressing your caller. I do agree changes definitely need to be made. And in just talking about the Constitution, one of the things I think people tend to forget is that the Constitution was created not necessarily to be a permanent document, but as one that needed to be amended over time. Because we are fools to think that the rules that were made in 1787 apply now in 2020. Now, I'm not criticizing against the Constitution. If anything, I'm saying that there's room for additional amendment and changes to the Constitution, and we have to take advantage of that. Also, in discussing, of course, about race, I mean, I do believe, as your caller stated, that this is a problem we've been talking about a long time, and we're still talking about it. Now, can there be changes? Like I said earlier, we can't stop discussing about the problems in our country. We can't stop discussing about race. We can't shy from it. And I can understand the caller's frustration because it does seem like a problem that isn't going to go anywhere anytime soon. But we have to constantly keep at this issue because if not, like I said before, really that means the end of our country as we know it.
Dr. Oscar Williams joins us today on Vox Pop. Kevin is in Great Barrington. Kevin, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much for the talk. I'd like to ask Dr. Williams what his opinion or any kind of ideas on the elevated rate of autism, especially in Afro-American youth in this country. I guess that's my only question.
Well, I'm not sure that's his specialty, but Dr. Williams, go ahead if you wish, sir.
If I understand, the question is about elevated levels of autism among African-American youth.
I
have to admit that would not be my specialty. So unfortunately, I can't respond to that question. I mean, but I'm sure I have colleagues who are able to look into that much better than I am. So unfortunately, I can't answer your question.
Well, I mean, you're a doctor, but not that kind of doctor, right? Let's go to Rick in Catskill. Rick, you're on.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I just wanted to talk a little bit about history, too, but a little earlier than that, maybe about 60,000 years ago, when there were no races, when the only Homo sapiens or human beings that lived on Earth lived in East Africa. You know, and that was before the big migration. I'm sure most of you, most everybody knows this history of human beings. And at that time, we were all African. And so all of our ancestors are African. Everyone on Earth, whether it's in China, in Australia, wherever it is. But I always find it interesting how, because we moved to different locations and over thousands and thousands of years had different cultures, different diets, different adaptations, so that we look a little bit different, but we're all basically Africans, don't you think?
How does that help us now?
Are you guys there?
Yeah, we're here.
Well, my point is that for people to be so upset about Africa, we are all African.
All right, very good,
so,
Rick.
I mean, I don't understand, you know, that's just my point.
All right, thanks. Doctor?
Well, to try to respond, really, when you do take a look at the continent of Africa, and I do have to remind some people I come across that it's not a country, it's a continent. Africa is the source of some of the oldest examples of civilization in the world. When it comes particularly to things like medicine, also particularly ceremonial burial, you look no further than the continent of Africa. Also particularly looking at the Egyptian culture, which really is considered the base, if you will, of modern civilization. So I do believe your caller, you know, definitely has a point. And I guess in the caller's mind, if we're all from Africa, then why are we having all of this racial strife?
Right.
All
right. Well, we have about 1 minute here, so let's go to Gary in Belchertown. Gary, you're on.
Hi. Thank you. I care about words. Black Lives Matter is a wonderful slogan, which we can all appreciate. My ear, though, would like to amend that slightly. Of course, it's too late now, but if originally it had been Black Lives Matter 2, T-O-O, then I think it would have been a little bit more of an inclusive sweep.
Okay.
And I wanted to just hear what you all thought.
Dr. Williams, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I understand where the caller is coming from with the amendment to Black Lives Matter. My simple response is, if Black Lives did matter too, we wouldn't be at this point. and I'm not, you know, definitely coming down against the caller, but I think one of the reasons why you did have the Black Lives Matter slogan is because with all of the tragic police killings, particularly in the past 8 to 10 years, being so prominent in the media, but yet in a number of cases, nothing came of the of the policemen who committed these right. these atrocities. You have groups like Black Lives Matter that say, okay, well, obviously, Black people's lives do not matter if you can be killed on television and nothing comes of it. So I understand where the caller's coming from, and I hope the caller understands also why that slogan is the way it is.
Well, Dr. Williams, that is where we will have to leave it. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope you come back soon. Support comes from C&H Architects, working with residential clients throughout the Berkshires and Hudson Valley to create a legacy of resilient architecture, passive home, net zero renovation, and new construction designed for the next 100 years. CNHArchitects.com. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. And Berkshire Money Management, helping individuals figure out what enough looks like for them now and in the future. BerkshireMM.com for details. Once again, thanks to Dr. Oscar Williams for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Zach, our engineer. Jordan Yoxall answered the phones. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Birds with Rich Guthrie. Stand by now for the book show.